We're getting meta on the rundown this week because we're running down the year's top stories from 2023. Hi, I'm Tom Hollingsworth, and welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown for Wednesday, December the 20th, 2023. As I mentioned in the cold open, we are going to be running down the top stories in this special year-end episode. So buckle up, because we're taking a trip down memory lane for some of the biggest things that happened in the year that was, with my friend, Mr. Stephen Foskett. Stephen, it's good to have you back on the show.
It's good to be here, Tom. I'm thrilled to be here on National Sangria Day, also National Go Caroling Day. I wonder if those are related.
Possibly. It depends on how much sangria you've had, whether or not you feel like singing. But it is also National Dot Your I's Day, as along with crossing your T's. That's what we're going to get into in these stories. And I'm sure that you've seen a lot of things that you would say are some of the biggest stories of the year. But here are the things that were most important to us as we looked back on all of the enterprise tech news. And Stephen, I'm going to let you start this off with one of your favorite subjects, Intel.
Absolutely. So you could say that this was the year of Intel, Tom. And frankly, let's just go a little further and say that it's the year of friend of the show, Pat Gelsinger. So Intel made a lot of news in 2023, mainly because this is Pat really asserting his vision for what the company ought to be. We've talked a lot about that this year in terms of, Intel making sure that they're able to be the next, have the next great wave for the company. And that's exactly what's happening here. Basically, all throughout 2023, we had news stories again and again and again that related to Intel trimming the fat, focusing on its core, and making sure that it was a great manufacturing business and a great processor business first and foremost. So let's start with sort of some of the stories that we saw. First off, back in February, Intel axed the Pathfinder program as well as the networking business. That gave us all something to think about. In April, they exited the server market, which again, if you didn't know, Intel was actually a server OEM, and they used this to sort of prototype and show what they were capable of in the server market. Not a core business, they got out of it. At that point, we were all saying, oh, I wonder what else is happening. There were some other things too, the drone business and all sorts of things like that that they got out of. Then on the positive note, in June, Intel announced that they would be expanding fabs in other countries. Here in Ohio, we're very much looking forward to Intel's mega fab down near Columbus. But of course, that's all part of Intel's, again, focus on manufacturing and focus on reclaiming the lead in semiconductor manufacturing. So that's happening in other areas as well, in Germany. And that actually went with the announcements later in the year as well, a deal with Tower Semiconductor that was terminated in August and then kind of back on a little bit in September as more of a partnership. Also, in terms of the end-of-life products, yes, we were not surprised. It did happen. The Intel NUCs were shelved in July. Since then, actually, companies have picked up the reins on that one, and we're pretty excited to see where that form factor goes, even though it's not going to be an Intel-owned product anymore. There's definitely a good life to that. We talked a lot about NUCs at our Edge Field Day event, and they make a lot of sense. Also, we saw a spin-out of PSG in October. And the optical business unit went to Jabil in November. So overall, what we've seen here again is Intel refocusing on the processor business, on the core of the business, basically making sure that they get right the things that they do best and making sure that that is the focus of the company again. And I respect them for doing that. I think that's the right move for the company, and it's the right move for the industry, because I think we all need more focused availability of advanced semiconductors. One more thing that I have to mention as well. In March, Gordon Moore passed away, one of the greatest people in our tech industry, and of course, a very important name for Intel. So I couldn't let it go without mentioning Gordon Moore's passing. Tom, as always, it seems like every week there's another breach disclosure, another cybersecurity issue. But we're starting to see the government take these things seriously. And that's what happened with regard to the SolarWinds case. Now, SolarWinds, if I can editorialize for a minute, I feel like SolarWinds was almost unfairly singled out as being, you know, this egregious breach, when there have been egregious breaches for so many companies. But now we're seeing the SEC getting involved. So talk a little bit about how the government is getting involved in data breaches.
And I think it's an important story, Stephen, because if we wanted to sit here and list all the data breaches that happened in 2023, this would be a six-hour mega episode on the level of hardcore history, but we're not going to do that. I can pretty much nail it down to some very easy things. Lots of companies got hit. It was a lot worse than they thought. Microsoft and Okta are probably the two biggest stories. You know that because you're still hearing about fallout from both of them, and we covered those as much as we could in the rundown, but it seemed like every few weeks we were getting more and more that was getting dug up on it. Stolen signing certificates, 100% of customer data was stolen. It was so bad that in March, we started to hear rumblings that the SEC was getting mad. But you know how government stuff works, right? It takes a little bit of time for that to get beefed up. Well, that happened around July. In fact, it was right after the 4th of July holiday that we started to hear that the SEC was taking a look at the SolarWinds CFO and CISO. And everyone was like, well, that's really interesting because executives don't get punished in this part of the world. Like they, obviously they have to answer some very tough questions, but nothing really happens after that. And from there on, the SEC seemed determined that they were going to put a stop to this. So in August, they announced that there was a new window for disclosing breaches that were of a material nature to a company's bottom line. How short of a window? 4 days. No longer could you hide it in the language of whatever and wait until your 10K had to be filed at the end of the quarter. You had to disclose immediately if it was a material breach. Now, as I mentioned on an episode of The Rundown, you can get squirrely with whatever you want to call a material breach, but the fact remains is that you have to disclose that. Important note, those rules actually did not take effect until this month, and we know that because a breaching company tried to take it out on a different company last month in November. We covered that on The Rundown as well. Where it got really interesting was in October, right around Halloween, when we found out that the SolarWinds CISO had been indicted. This was a groundbreaking release because it suddenly made it abundantly clear that no one was going to be safe from being indicted. As you mentioned at the beginning, Stephen, this may have been a little heavy-handed. But unfortunately, when you, just like every oldest child out there knows, when you're the one that gets caught breaking the rules for the first time, you have to bear the hardest weight of the punishment before everybody comes back and goes, maybe that was a little too much. We won't know the outcome of this trial for a while because there's a lot of evidence that has to be presented. There's a lot of argument that has to take place. I think there will ultimately be a plea deal, if I'm going to editorialize a little bit. The reason for that is because the SEC has proven that they are going to enforce their rules. Companies can no longer use the excuse, well, I didn't know what was going on. And so they're going to have to be more engaged. That means that companies are going to have to rewrite their own rules to make sure that they're following what they've been saying for years so that it can't come back on them after the fact. And they can find their CFO, their CEO, their CTO being sued in the same way. I would fully expect this will not be the last lawsuit that the SEC brings, but it very well may be the last one that it's brought where ignorance was used as an excuse. Stephen, the other big deal that we saw here in 2023 that felt like it took the whole year to come to fruition was, of course, Broadcom's landmark acquisition of VMware. Stephen, probably the biggest acquisition deal that we saw in 2023, of course, was the year-long saga that was Broadcom's landmark pickup of VMware. This felt like a roller coaster thrill ride. I want you to take us through a little bit of what happened, not only pre-acquisition, but post-acquisition, because buckle up, folks, you're going to need the edge of your seat for this one.
Yeah. Absolutely, Tom. This may be the biggest story of the year if you ask IT pros, because of course VMware is a cornerstone of the industry and has been for decades. Basically, the entire time we've been doing Gestalt IT and Tech Field Day, VMware has been where it's at. We watched VMware go through many changes. We saw VMware be acquired by EMC. We saw EMC acquire Dell. We saw VMware sort of in and out with the special purpose thing and all that. But then, in 2022, Broadcom announced that they would be acquiring VMware. Now, this took a lot of people by surprise because many people weren't aware that Broadcom has been a major player in the enterprise software space. Longer than this. I mean, this has been a market for Broadcom much longer than just the VMware acquisition. But of course, as you say, there was a will they, won't they, will they be able to question this whole time. We talked about it in July when they announced that they were expecting to clear. I think I remember expressing some skepticism of that, especially in November when China announced that it was going to be delaying the deal. At that point, I was really sure that it was going to be delayed further, but guess what? Didn't happen. It was cleared. It was closed on November 22nd. We talked about the fact that the deal closed, and VMware is now VMware by Broadcom. Unfortunately, as we would expect, things didn't all go smoothly. We saw some layoffs before the acquisition actually happened and actually closed. And we've seen more since the acquisition. We've seen a reorganization of VMware and a spinoff of some things. We talked actually just last week about VMware spinning out their end user computing and Carbon Black security units. No, those aren't spun out yet. They're just announcing that those are not going to be part of the company going forward. We also talked in some detail here last week with Keith Townsend from Futurum about the implications of VMware's new licensing scheme. And I think that a lot of people are kind of surprised that here we are after the acquisition, and the story is not, wow, Broadcom already screwed it up. The story is, oh, that's interesting. Broadcom is doing some things that make some sense here with this product, with the company. It certainly is something that hurts a lot of people in the friends who worked there and so on who have uncertainty about their jobs or maybe don't have jobs at VMware right now. But overall, I think that the dust is settling, and it's settling into a sort of a sensible place for VMware. We'll see where it goes for the long term. I think there's still a lot of cynicism about VMware under Broadcom. But, so far it's been a series of at least good business moves. Tom, one of the big stories this year as well is all the stuff that's been going on at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Now, HPE is a major player in enterprise tech. They have done a tremendous job, for example, with their GreenLake services. And their Aruba Networks business unit is really, really strong. A friend of the Field Day, by all means. Talk to us a little bit about HP's rise.
Well, it's kind of funny because when you think about HPE, unless you're a networking or mobility person like me, you might not think of Aruba first, but they have always been kind of their own little piece, if you want to think about it like that. All the way back in 2015 when the acquisition happened, that March, we kept hearing things like reverse acquisition. They're taking over our networking business and they're running with it. And they had made some moves along the way. I mean, probably Silver Peak being a part brought into the HP portfolio was maybe one of the biggest things to happen to them in recent memory. But then this March, we saw two major acquisition announcements a week apart. The first was that HP was buying a company called Athonet, which firmly cemented them into the private LTE 5G CBRS market. That made them an instant player in a brand new technology area, got them a huge customer acquisition, and was something that was very much a buzz in the industry. So how do you follow that up? Oh, that's easy. You go full in on SASE and SSE by acquiring Axis Security. The next week, they went from adding on major CBRS and private LTE to jumping in with both feet to the SASE SSE market. Remember, they have the Silver Peak SD-WAN technology. they needed the software suite to go on top of it. And I had the opportunity to talk to John Spiegel at Axis, and man, he was over the moon by this. He was like, I can't wait to see where we go. And I got to see that firsthand because I was at Aruba Atmosphere this year. How close was I? Somebody jumped over me on stage. We have video. But the important thing is that we got to see messaging from not only the newly minted HPE Aruba, no longer Aruba, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Company, but Antonio Neri was on stage with everyone talking about how important this was, what a cornerstone piece of HPE's strategy HPE Aruba was. And when you look at all the advances that are going on in the industry, they all have one thing in common. Users need to be able to connect to these services. That means edge connectivity. That means edge security. That means data center connectivity. And Aruba can provide all of that. Seeing the rebranding that's taken place is something impressive. I got to have meetings with their CMO during Atmosphere, and they were asking how people were going to look at this. Is it HPE swallowing Aruba? Are we getting rid of that important culture that we've been developing over the years? And I said, right now, no. The important thing is that you keep making good products, you keep selling them to people, and you keep backing them up with the great support that you've had, which is something that HPE Aruba has enjoyed for years. They've been a very well-regarded part of the industry. But you can see that the integration between HPE and Aruba is continuing even today. We got the announcement at the end of Aruba Atmosphere this year that Aruba Atmosphere will be co-located with HPE Discover in 2024. That's a major shift from a corporate culture of two separate but sort of equal components to being more of one big family. It would be like if a company like Meraki announced they were having their own version of Meraki Live that was a different date than Cisco Live. That would be really weird. This is the reverse. This is two companies that have had a rich history together for the last 8 years coming together to make something exciting happen. And I'm fully on board with that because I would love to see a lot of people at Discover and Atmosphere in 2024 to see how this messaging and how these product lines evolve over the years. All right, Stephen, we've made it this far into the episode and we haven't said those two little letters that seem to be on the tip of everyone's tongue.
TS, Taylor Swift?
No, the other two letters. It's time to talk about AI.
Well, there you have it. I guess if you asked your non-techie friends what were the top stories of the year, I imagine that many of them would have AI and OpenAI and ChatGPT as one of those stories, along with Taylor Swift, of course. And frankly, it has been everywhere this year. Every event I've gone to has been, it wouldn't be right to say pivoting toward generative AI, diving in with both feet toward generative AI. Everywhere we go, they're talking about it, and it's been the top story in terms of enterprise tech impacting the public sphere. Now, we talked actually quite a lot. I want to call your attention to a guest episode that we did back in May 17th, with Ned Bellavance talking about the various AI controversies from Copilot and ChatGPT and whether these things should be used or not. That one was just a great overview of a lot of the things that have been going on and a lot of the reasons that people are concerned about AI. But let's zoom in a little bit here toward the big player in this space, which would be, of course, OpenAI. So right around the turn of the year, OpenAI introduced their ChatGPT offering. It's hard to believe, I think, here in December of 2023, that was only December of 2022 that ChatGPT was introduced. That's when this thing just exploded into public consciousness. And frankly, the reason for it was because it was so darn amazing. Suddenly people were using, they had an easy to use generative AI model that could allow them to do all sorts of incredible things right there. And it was available to the public because they opened it up to the world. Apparently, they got over 1 million signups in 5 days for people to try it. I was one of those people. And frankly, everybody was wowed by this. But throughout the year, I think that there was all sorts of hiccups. We reported on many of those here on the rundown in terms of access denied, signups problems, you know, scaling problems, but also some of the hiccups in terms of the company. Now, the company did make a deal with Microsoft where Microsoft would provide an investment, and it turns out a lot of infrastructure in order to receive a huge and powerful stake in the company. And Microsoft was able to leverage that into overall leadership in AI. In fact, Microsoft was pretty happy to be able to announce a better search engine integration with generative AI than Google had, and Google was playing catch up. So that was a really interesting angle this year. But of course, the other angle, after they released their ChatGPT-4 in March, again, a much better generative AI text model. But the big news, of course, happened later this year when we saw the whole incredible chaos in November, that one weekend in November when nobody knew what the heck was going on. And as I said then, we could have recorded the rundown any of five consecutive days, and the headline would have been entirely different. It does seem that that has settled out. The original OpenAI CEO is back. They're putting together a new board, and OpenAI is going the direction that, well, a lot of people figured it would go, and maybe not a lot of people hoped it would go, which is toward being a for-profit, you know, enterprise juggernaut. And that's continuing. And in fact, as I said on that show, Microsoft wins no matter what happens here, because they are, of course, are incredibly powerful partner with OpenAI with these models. Now, one thing I'll call out as well is a few weeks ago, we talked about IBM and Meta and their AI alliance as a way to sort of soften the blow there and have an alternative world. And of course, there are lots of other companies in the AI space as well. So here we are in December. Generative AI, of course, is all the rage. You know, literally, like, you know, we're looking at announcements coming out, Intel's announcement of their next generation Xeon and Core processors, AI, the whole time through. NVIDIA talking at, you know, all of their events. It's all about AI. AMD made a huge splash in December with, again, AI-focused announcements that rocketed their stock up. I expect that to continue because, frankly, this technology is still rising, and we'll see where it goes long term. Tom, another big story this year was all about licensing and open source. Now, this is something that I've been following very closely in my industries, and I know you've been following it as well. Open source is a huge power in the industry, and yet, it seems like there are constantly conflicts here. Tell us a little bit about the open source licensing battle.
Well, I mean, when you look at everything that's been going on, you have to go back to some of the stuff that Red Hat has been doing with their enterprise Linux distribution. I mean, I was a fan of using some of the clones that were developed because, of course, Red Hat had to offer the source code for free under terms of the open source licensing that they used. And anyone who's ever used CentOS knows what that means. There were a number of distributions that were basically bit for bit compatible with Red Hat Enterprise Linux. You could literally build your packages against a CentOS system, know that they'd run on RHEL, and everything was fine. Well, if you remember back in 2020, they changed that. So CentOS became less of a clone and more of a development branch, if you will. That didn't make people very happy. This year, Red Hat did itself one better. It effectively changed the way that you were able to access the source code. You had to be a registered user. They put it behind a paywall, and they required you to jump through hoops. You still didn't have to pay for it. They were legally following all of the requirements. However, they were making the hoops a lot tighter. And now the only thing you can do is use CentOS, which again is about as stable as Debian Sid. And if you know what I'm talking about, you're probably running around in terror. That really angered a lot of people. I was immediately getting press releases from a lot of the clone developers going, "This will not stand." They got everybody so riled up that Oracle came out and talked about how important it was to have freely available open source software. Yes, you're not imagining things. In the summer, hell did freeze over because Oracle was championing the rights of free software users everywhere. they immediately went into defensive mode. If you think back through the stories that we covered, Oracle and SUSE announced they were working on a brand new project in July. That project then became the Open ELA, which was announced at the first part of August. And then 2 weeks later, SUSE went private, which tells me either they're going to be acquired at some point and turned into maybe Oracle Linux or something like that, or there are bigger plans at play here. You also have to think about what this means for the model overall, because everyone that was getting into the open source business flat out said, we're trying to do the Red Hat model. We're going to offer our software available for free or very low cost, and we're going to make money off of the services that we sell to support it. Well, what happens to the Red Hat model when the biggest champion of that model has decided we're not going to do that anymore? And that's rankled people the wrong way. And I thought, if that had just been the end of it, this is another one of those Linux distribution things. We've seen this before. We'll get over it. Yeah, I had to bite my tongue for all of about a day because HashiCorp decided to do their own little bit with their licensing. They didn't go full Red Hat. They got close. They adopted a new business source license, the BSL. Now, if you dig into the BSL, basically it looks very much like your typical open source license, but it does have one little caveat. You can't use their software in competing projects, and they get to decide what a competing project was. Yeah, you can imagine how the keyboard warriors felt about this one. It took no time. Within a week, we heard rumors that HashiCorp's biggest tool, Terraform, was going to be forked. By the way, I still say that you should have called it Ferratorm. It would have been great. It took a month, and then we saw OpenTofu, which was given to the Linux Foundation, to be an open source Terraform. Now, of course, just like any other fork, it's not going to be a perfect bit for bit copy. If you build against OpenTofu, there's no guarantee that it'll work on Terraform and vice versa. But it shows you that open source community was primed to remove impediments to their ability to develop software. Do you have to use Terraform as your development platform and for all those other things? No, but when the tool that you have works perfectly good as a hammer, why are you going to invest in anything else? And I think that what we've seen is that spirit of open source is still alive. We're going to use the best tool for the job, but we don't want there to be any impediments in it. We don't want to utilize your software if you're going to walk in tomorrow and say, you can't do this anymore unless you pay for it. I don't think that this is going to go away in 2024. We're still going to have massive adoption of open source software. We're still going to have bright people writing things, bringing communities together to develop important software. What we're going to be much more careful about is the way that it's licensed, the way that it's offered to the community, and the way that the community adoption tracks after that. Because we've seen that companies are willing to yank the rug out from underneath our feet. We have to make sure that that rug is stapled to the floor. All right, Stephen, there's one more story that we need to cover. Breaking news, if you will. It's something big, at least to us, and I'm going to let you say more.
Well, thanks, Tom. As we announced on Thursday, and incidentally, we broke LinkedIn. We took LinkedIn down because this announcement was so big. As we announced on Thursday, Gestalt IT and Tech Field Day are joining the Futurum Group. So this is a large and expanding group of media, analysts, lab, go-to-market. It's a big group of people who are all working in ways that dovetail nicely with what we're doing here at Gestalt IT and Tech Field Day. I'm thrilled to announce that I will continue to lead Tech Field Day and Gestalt IT just as I have. All the folks are staying. Everybody's going to continue doing the things that they always did. But we're going to have a lot more resources kind of going forward to make these things happen. So expect that there will be another many more announcements about new Tech Field Day events and in exciting new topics. We're going to embiggen those events with more sponsors, more delegates, more everything. So keep an eye at techfieldday.com, gestaltit.com, and of course futurumgroup.com to learn more about how all these things work together. But through it all, I want to promise you, the viewers, nothing is going to change. We're still going to be just as snarky as ever. We're still going to be just as impartial as ever. We're still going to represent the voice of independent IT practitioners. and we're going to light a rocket underneath this thing and go bigger than ever before.
I will note that the snarky part was written into my contract. That's non-negotiable. Also non-negotiable was the fact that Stephen and I will still be your co-hosts for the Rundown every Wednesday at 12:30 Eastern Time. We have a lot of news that we have to cover. Lord knows we do it better than anybody else. We're just going to keep on doing it because this is the way that we connect with you and the community. What's important to you, what you think matters, we're going to be the voice for you. We stand for the practitioners, just like Tron stands for the users. We're going to be here every week with more great enterprise IT stories, some good, some bad, some people getting bought, some people getting sold. At the end of the day, we're going to be telling you why it matters to you and why you should be paying attention. You can follow us on our website at gestaltit.com, where you can check out the show notes, linked articles where we found all this goodness. You can follow us on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/gestaltitvideo, where you get to see our bright, sparkling faces. If you'd rather hear the dulcet tones of our voice, remember we have a podcast feed available. We have a variety of great events that are going to be coming up in 2024. If you go to techfieldday.com, you can check those out. We are adding new events all the time. If there is news that you want us to know about, make sure you reach out to us. We're always available on all the social platforms. We love to hear what you have to say. And this year especially, we had a number of people in the community say that they use us as their primary source for news. The number of times that I got stopped at events going, I love what you guys do with the Rundown. I really appreciate it. It warms our hearts because we do this for you. We don't get to just sit around and talk about the news. We want to do it for the people out there. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for giving us a little bit of your attention on the Wednesday shows. We're going to keep doing this, and we're going to keep having fun with it, and we hope that you keep having fun listening. Stephen, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I do have one thing to say, and that's that I want to give a special shout-out to Corey, producer of The Rundown every single week. Makes it happen. Our king of podcasts, Corey Dierig. Thank you, Corey, for doing this. Thank you to the entire Gestalt IT and Field Day family. I also want to give a special shout-out to some of the guests hosts that we've had this year. So Tom, let's go ahead and we'll take turns reading these. Okay, how's that sound?
Okay.
So first off, my good friend Chris Grunderman. Thanks, man.
Calvin Hendricks Parker, thanks for stepping in.
Max Mortellaro, my brother. Glad to have you.
Ned Bellavance, your head's not in the clouds all the time. Sometimes you're on the Rundown too.
Tim Bertino, a real standout co-host this year.
Brian Knudsen, the best ponytail on a Rundown co-host.
Leon Adato, I mean, wow, love that guy.
Justin Warren, our best Australian co-host ever.
John Meyer, who absolutely killed it at AWS reInvent this year. Wow, what a guy.
Chris Reed, stand-up human being.
Nathan Bennett, also stand-up human being, but I gotta say, Nathan, you don't give yourself enough credit. Very sharp guy.
Jim Suprinsky, the winning word in Scrabble.
Keith Townsend, of course, our CTO advisor himself and friend and now co-worker at Futurum Group.
Scott Shadley, always a pleasure.
Steve Palooka, also always a pleasure. And also, you know, it's nice to have another Steve in the mix.
Gerard Cavallinas, a man who one day I hope to match his energy level.
Jeff Tun, who does some fantastic video casts of his own. Check out Jeff's work.
And how could we forget Mr. Backup, W. Curtis Preston. Curtis, even though I still think you're wrong about backup not being a part of security, I respect your opinion, and I am glad that you're able to co-host with us this year on The Rundown.
So tune in for more great Tech Field Day in 2024. We're kicking things off in January. January 31st is Cloud Field Day. Then Tom is headed to Amsterdam in February for Cisco Live. We've got AI Field Day coming in February, another networking Field Day event coming in late February, and a lot more Field Day events as well. Now that we're part of the Futurum Group, we're really looking forward to stepping on the gas and doing Field Day in all sorts of topics.
So for all of you out there who have been listening along, thank you very much for your patronage for the last year. Take care of yourselves. Stay warm or cool if you're a Southern Hemisphere listener. Look after those families. Enjoy the holidays because the Rundown will return.